darling, you've got to love me now. Should I stay or should I go?
It is 4:35 in the Anchorage Bowl. We're going to stay. This is the Aaron Selbig Show on KUDO 1080 AM. What a week we have had.
Oh, my God.
I mean, not only the elections on Tuesday, but the very next day, we welcomed back our old friend Alan Tesche, recovering from heart surgery, with the triumphant return of the Tesche Report. And today, guess what else is back, ladies and gentlemen? That's right, the Demo Memo.
All right.
Senator Johnny Ellis is the voice you hear. Senator Ellis, congratulations on the big turning of the tide on Tuesday. Good to see you. Good to see a smile on your face.
It was a good night for progressives in the state of Alaska. Not the greatest night, not the best night that's in our future to come, but it was a good night.
Do you think it is a sign of things to come?
I do. I heard you in the last segment say that Alaska is sometimes behind the political power curve by 18 months to 2 years.
That sounds about
and
right.
And so I think our high point is coming in the next election cycle. At least that's what we're going to be working for, with people of all political persuasions to really bring things around. But many times we've gone backwards or we've stayed the same in the legislative lineup. But we made some progress on Tuesday night, and I appreciate everybody who helped us do that. It was a team effort.
You know, we were talking about some of the victories here in Alaska on Tuesday night. Of course, some of the high-profile races didn't turn out to be victories. Speaking of Don Young, ballot measure 2, and Tony Knowles. However, you gained 3 seats in the legislature, and probably the most important thing, and it may not sound like a whole lot to some people, but in the Senate, you went from a 12-8 Republican majority to 11-9. That's only 1 seat. Hollis French was in here yesterday and said that that is a huge shift. Do you agree, and how so?
Absolutely. It is a huge deal, and I have to say that Ralph Seekins in Fairbanks losing his Senate seat is a political earthquake.
I'm sorry, Johnny. I'm going to have to stop you right there. We actually passed a law on the show that made it illegal to talk about Ralph Seekins.
Oh, my God.
So you can't.
Are you fearful of being put in jail by Senator Seekins in his last few days in office?
We'll suspend it.
Okay, all right. Good. Like habeas corpus,
right.
We're going to suspend that too. I'm so offended by those guys who preach constitutional adherence and then come in and suspend the right of habeas corpus.
We still have a constitution.
I mean, don't get me started on that one. But up in Fairbanks, it was a political earthquake. And the aftershocks are still being felt.
Jim Holm, too.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Fairbanks folks, Representative David Guttenberg, the Democrat up there, the lone Democrat for a while in the House, won't be quite so lonely because there will be Joe Thomas in the Senate replacing Ralph Seekins. And that's just a big deal because he was the roadblock on ethics reform, Berta Gardner's bill. He and Ben Stevens blocked all that. And Ralph Seekins, of course, hoped to come back and possibly be the compromise candidate for Senate president. He saw that as a stepping stone to be our governor of the state of Alaska. He's a bright guy with an enormous ego and a bad agenda, in my opinion. And he was on a roll for the future. But Joe Thomas and lots of progressive and regular folks in Fairbanks said no way to that negative
agenda. It's a mutiny. I mean, that was probably, to me, the most surprising race of the evening. I mean, he didn't just lose. He lost big.
No, the magnitude of Joe Thomas's victory was very surprising. But Joe Thomas took our advice that Hollis French and I gave him and took command and took charge of the debate and made it about important things to people in Fairbanks. And I have to tell you a little bit of the backstory is some of the bad karma left over from the campaign that Mr. Seekins and Randy Rudrick ran against a very honorable representative, former Representative John Davies, up in Fairbanks. And it was a very ugly, unfair campaign. And a lot of the people that helped Joe Thomas said, we need to right a terrible wrong that was done 4 years ago. So Mr. Seekins is back to the private sector.
What did Mr. Seekins do to Mr. Davies?
Well, there were all kinds of negative, vicious personal campaigning. I wasn't there to see the exact details of it, but it was a pretty brutal campaign.
Mm-hmm.
John Davies was a very honorable man who probably didn't fight back hard enough because he thought no one will believe these lies the Republicans are putting out. But enough of the people did that Mr. Seekins won. But the political correction took place on Tuesday night.
4:40 in the Anchorage Bowl. Senator Johnny Ellis with us in the studio for the return of the Demo Memo. Our phone lines are open for you at 929-5160 if you've got a question or comment for the senator. Let's go to line one now, where we're joined by Rico. Rico, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Senator Johnny Ellis.
Hey, Rico.
Well, Rico, I'm sorry, we've got a bad connection. I don't know if you're on a cell phone or what, but we can't hear you very well, buddy. If you are on a cell phone, maybe you can get us on a landline somewhere and give us a call back. Sorry about that. That's too bad. All right, but that does free up phone lines, folks. 929-5160, the telephone number. Now, Johnny, we hardly ever talk about this. We almost never talk about national politics, but I want to get your take on what happened with the huge sea change in Washington, D.C.
Well, it was a very exciting night to watch the wave, the blue tsunami, come across from the East Coast to the West Coast. And I was just very gratified by, especially in my former home state, my birth state of Missouri, to see Claire McCaskill, who was pushed forward by Michael Fox and the debate over stem cell research, throw Mr. Jim Talent, sorry, bud, out of the U.S. Senate. That was a real victory for me and all my Missouri relatives back there. I contacted them and asked them to vote for Claire McCaskill. And she's a real moderate to conservative Democrat. And I may not agree with her on every single issue, but she, I think, is truly representative of regular middle class and working class people in the state of Missouri. So that was just one example. I gave money to Harold Ford there in Tennessee, hoping that he is a part of the new generation of leadership, and I think he'll be back in national politics.
Boy, speaking of dirty campaign, holy smokes.
Racist campaigns.
Shades of Willie Horton in that race. Absolutely amazing.
And so it was gratifying to watch that across the country. I know, it has a definite impact on the state of Alaska with Ted Stevens, Don Young, and Lisa Murkowski going to the minority. So their whole arguments of why they should be reelected every time with their Republican seniority and position for the state, I think Alaska voters are going to have to rethink the justification for sending an all-Republican congressional delegation back to D.C. Times have changed. They haven't kept up. And I think the voters may have a different view of things in 2 years.
What's it going to take for this brand-new Democratic majority in Congress to last?
Well, I think they have to not be full of themselves. They have to not overreach. They have to look for things that people of all political persuasions in the country agree with. I expect we'll see an increase in the federal minimum wage come and have good support from Republicans and Democrats across the country. So I think that's going to be one of the first things. I think Nancy Pelosi also has promised in the first 100 hours to start to drain the swamp. The whole K Street project, Tom DeLay, all the corruption that caught up with Republicans. It wasn't just sex scandals. It was also the money and influence peddling scandals that caught up with the Republicans. And our Democratic message in all across the country and here in Alaska were these car window signs, had enough.
Yeah, I saw
if
those.
If you've had enough, vote Democratic. And lots of Republicans and lots of independents did to send a message. So I think the Democrats got the message that we need to be looking out for regular folks and making the government more open, honest, transparent. And one of the first things Nancy Pelosi plans to do in draining the swamp is what we plan to do in Juneau with Representative Berta Gardner's ethics law, ethics reform that was stymied by Seekins and Ben Stevens. Those people are out of the way. I'm happy to say I've survived Frank Murkowski and survived Ben Stevens, survived Ralph Seekins of Fairbanks. So I see a real opportunity with some of the moderate Republicans to drain the swamp in Juneau. With ethics reform, Berta Gardner's bill needs to pass soon.
We've got to take a short break here on the Aaron Selbig Show. Senator Johnny Ellis, our guest, 929-5160, the telephone number. You know, Johnny, I almost forgot to tell you, congratulations, by the way. You were up for re-election. I'm looking at the results here, and you pulled in excess of 95% of the vote.
That's right. It was 100%, actually, but there were some write-ins. I think Mickey Mouse and a few people got in there, but... I was very appreciative of my neighbors in Midtown and downtown Anchorage.
I was one of them. I voted for you. 4:44 in the Anchorage Bowl. We'll be right back after these messages.
Please stand up.
This is the Aaron Selbig Show on KUDO 1080 AM, your progressive and victorious voice. In Anchorage, Senator Johnny Ellis, our guest this segment. with the triumphant return of the demo memo. Our phone lines are open, folks, for you at 929-5160. If you've got a question or comment for Senator Ellis, let's go to line one now and to Lars, who's been waiting patiently. Hi, Lars. You're on the air with Senator Ellis.
Hi. Again, congratulations to Senator Ellis.
Thank you very much.
Just one observation. I hope you can hear me.
Sure.
We hear you just fine.
Okay, one observation about the national election. Hasn't received a whole lot of press, but Representative Richard Pombo down in the 11th District of California, Republican, was not reelected. Those of your listeners who are environmentalists should be sort of thrilled with that.
Mr.
Pombo
was
sort of a real proponent of, selling off the national forests at $1,000 an acre, gutting the Endangered Species Act. So seeing him gone was for me a really good thing.
Absolutely.
Just a question, maybe. I'm a resident down in Girdwood at least part of the time, and Mike Hawker down there was reelected after a fairly good challenge from Pat Abney. It was kind of a disappointment. I guess I was wondering if the senator might have any comments on that particular race. I'm going to go ahead and tune off and listen if that's okay.
Thanks, Lars. You bet.
Thank you, Lars. I had lunch with Pat Abney today, and we had a little debriefing session with candidates and campaign managers. And I know Pat was disappointed. A lot of us were disappointed that it wasn't closer. But, you know, Mr. Hawker has been a player in the Republican majority and raised an enormous war chest compared to Pat. Pat was a little late getting her campaign started. She came closer last 2 years ago in challenging Mr. Hawker, and so we hoped it would be closer this time. But Mr. Hawker had lots of support in the business community and lots of financial support and just kind of powered it out with television commercials. He was on television a lot. Pat had very little television advertising. And I think until Mr. Hawker really, people in that district really get more familiar with his voting record, that I think is pretty bad in many cases. And yes, the Daily News is right that he's one of the smarter Republicans, and he is a CPA. And brings some skills to the job, but when you get down to his voting record, it's not a good one for things that we care about. And so Pat Abney fought the good fight, but people in that district need to wake up to the kind of representation they get and not just pay attention to the TV commercials that flatter each of us as candidates when we pay for them.
Senator Johnny Ellis, our guest, 929-5160, the telephone number. Let's go right over to line two, where we're joined by Jerry. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air with Senator Ellis.
The very oily representation Representative Hawker gives them, I think would be a better way to describe it.
That's a good characterization, Jerry.
My question is concerning organization of the Senate with one vote difference between the two of you, or two votes there, 11 to 9. I would think in that case a coalition would be in order. Of maybe, and I assume that the Republicans would probably organize it under Thorault, but probably take and organize it with some Democrats involved. That makes sense to you?
Well, there's a lot of churning going on right now because an 11-9 majority is very shaky. I came into the Senate in 1992, Jerry, as you remember, with George Jacko. It was a 10-10 split in the state Senate, and George Jacko from Pedro Bay, and we know how that turned out with all the scandal. He went over and put Rick Halford into the Senate president's chair, and what he got was $63 million in capital projects, chairmanship of the Rules Committee, and a seat on finance.
Wow.
And then after all of the women came forward and said he was harassing them and abusing them, he lost his power, but he was there to keep Rick Halford in the chair.
Let's focus on what is today. I don't think that Terrio is a George Jackal by any means.
No, I wasn't implying that at all. It was just a history lesson for the listeners that a very closely divided Senate is a very difficult thing, and 11-9 is very narrowly divided. And there are lots of conversations going on. The Republicans always try to organize in a strictly Republican fashion because of Randy Rudrick's discipline and the discipline of a closed Republican primary. So
does he have much juice, or will he be able to have exercise much juice?
Well, I keep waiting for Sarah Palin to kick Randy Rudrick out of the job.
Well, I was wondering about that. As of Tuesday night, she's more powerful than he is.
Well,
are his days numbered?
She's the head of the party.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the Central Committee that decides that Randy Rudrick wins them elections and is a hardcore political operative, and it seems to be a standoff. And I'm waiting for Sarah Palin to take charge.
Thanks for your call, Jerry. We've got to take
still not getting an answer.
We've got to take a break here. We've got callers lined up behind you. Thanks a lot. 929-5160, the telephone number. Senator Johnny Ellis, our guest. We'll be right back with more of the Aaron Selbig Show. Uh-oh. 4:55 in the Anchorage Bowl. You're tuned in to KUDO 1080 AM, your progressive voice in Anchorage, and this is the Aaron Selbig Show. We bring back the demo memo today. Senator Johnny Ellis, our guest in the studio. Good to have you back, Johnny.
Good to be here. And at the top of the hour, well, I wanted to say kudos to KUDO for getting the word out about progressive issues and helping let folks know that there was a positive alternative out there, folks with a plan, folks
mm-hmm.
with a
We're
positive
in it to
agenda.
Win.
We're in it to win.
Mm-hmm.
And at the top of the show, JR came through with the Clash, Should I Stay or Should I Go, which is my theme song for the upcoming not-so-special fourth session of the legislature. This is the fourth special session of the 24th Alaska legislature.
That's ridiculous.
It was one last year, three this year. This one's wholly unnecessary. And Republicans and Democratic legislators agree on that point. Frank Murkowski it's a big waste of time and money to go down there with Frank Murkowski one more time.
I want to ask you about that. I also want to ask you about the upcoming Palin administration, of course. I understand you got a phone call from Governor Palin earlier today. We'll get to that in the second hour. Right now, however, we're going to try to squeeze in one more phone call before Air America News at the top of the hour. This is Richard on line one. Richard, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Johnny.
Hey, Richard.
Johnny, I kind of figured there's like, 20 or 30% way on the left and 20 or 30% way on the right, and everybody else is in the middle.
That's about right.
And me, I'm kind of like a composite. I don't know. I'm not a liberal and I'm not a conservative.
You sound like an Alaskan.
I am. Right.
A regular Alaskan.
I've been here since 80. And anyway, what I kind of look at it is I agree with the Republicans' fiscal policy, less government, less government, less government, but I don't agree with their social policies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just hoping that the Democrats will adopt a platform or whatever of less government, less spending, balance the budget. If they do that, then I'll get involved like I did with Strugalewski's campaign. But unless they do that, unless you guys control and limit the budget and really look at that hard, I got a problem.
I hear you, Richard. We, the Democratic Party in Alaska is becoming the party of fiscal responsibility. And I think the Republicans have fooled you. They fooled me years ago saying that they were for smaller government and they wanted to control the state spending. And they spent like drunken sailors.
Amen.
One party government of Republicans in Alaska has expanded the size and the scope of government. It took my breath away of what they did. Democrats in the last legislature recommended saving half the surplus between $600 million and $700 million. They voted us down and pre-spent the surplus on a bunch of items that didn't need to be pre-spent upon. And so I think you're going to see an evolution there, Richard. I think we have more to offer in that regard. But years ago, I really thought that the Republicans nationally cared about the national debt and the deficit and that they wanted to not expand the size and scope of government. But they've proven that they are hypocrites in that regard.
Well, I agree with that, and I just hope that that you can work with Palin, and I'm glad of the wins and everything, and
I just
hope you can do the things that make us more confident in our government and not have so much skepticism.
We'll give it a shot.
Thanks a lot, Richard, for the call. Appreciate it. Air America News coming up at the top of the hour. On the other side, Senator Johnny Ellis is going to stick around with us. We're going to talk about the upcoming Palin administration and the fourth not-so-special session set to kick off next week. All that and more coming up after Air America News. 5:07 p.m. in the Anchorage Bowl. You are tuned in to KUDO 1080 AM, your victorious voice in the Anchorage Bowl, and this is the Aaron Selbig Show. This hour, we are joined in the studio by Senator Johnny Ellis with the triumphant return of our weekly Friday feature, The Demo Memo. 929-5160, the telephone number, folks, if you'd like to jump in with a question for Senator Ellis. You know, Senator Ellis, you requested this song. JR dug it up for you, The Ramones.
That's awesome. Right. One of my favorites. And I'm going to need to be sedated if I have to go back with Frank Murkowski and Ben Stevens to the fourth special session. It's just outrageous.
Is there a rule on how many special sessions you can have before they're not special anymore?
Absolutely not. Do you remember when the public, Alaskan voting public, elected Frank Murkowski in a landslide victory?
Oh, Lord.
And I predicted bad things to come from one party Republican government, and Frank Murkowski is the supreme leader. And it's all played out. I'm sad to say that I was right in my predictions about just how bad it would get.
We've got callers on the line, Senator Ellis. But real quick, I do want to ask you about that not-so-special session set to kick off next week. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, there was a court ruling yesterday afternoon. A Fairbanks judge ruled that Frank Murkowski must have legislative approval to sign his so-called gas pipeline contract. So it appears, for now anyway, that point is moot, and a lot of the fears of some of your colleagues that he was going to subvert that, stick that into the
agenda. Bait
and agenda,
switch. It was going to be a bait and switch.
That appears to be not likely.
We have some protection from the court.
Right. The pretense for the special session is for the state to address how it's going to take care of same-sex partner benefits. Is this Lauren Lehman's fault?
Well, you know, Lauren Lehman, as lieutenant governor, has a ministerial function to sign those duly drafted regulations.
And he refused to do so.
He refused to do so because of his personal beliefs, mm-hmm. is pretty clear. That's easily cured by Frank Murkowski signing the regulations. He's refused to do so as well. So they have their personal political views and see an opportunity to stir things up. They saw an opportunity to stir things up when Scott Nordstrand stood down there in the Commissioner of Administration for Frank Murkowski, stood in front of the Nesbitt Courthouse and said that we needed to have a special session. Huge waste of time, huge waste of money, according to the Democrats. Some Republicans came forward and said the same thing right before the election to distance themselves from Frank Murkowski and the albatross he is. But Frank Murkowski's holding firm. I guess he's still off in Asia.
He's on his farewell tour in Asia.
The farewell
trying
tour
to
with the Taiwanese.
Secure a job for himself when this is all over. But, you know, that begs the question. On December 4th, Sarah Palin is going to be sworn in as
That's
the new
right.
governor. Why does Frank Murkowski care? Why is he doing this? Is it just a personal attack, or is he just being a jerk?
You know, if I could figure out the inner workings of Frank Murkowski's mind, he has resisted public opinion. He has resisted advice from his staff, some of whom are capable, intelligent people. Not all. Some of them have given him good advice over the years. On the jet, don't buy it, Governor. You know, he told them to get out of his office and to leave him alone. He would do whatever the hell he wanted to do. And so it's taken us down this very negative road. So it's just a big waste of time and money, and I just not looking forward to it at all.
We've got a full board of callers lined up, Johnny, with questions for you. Let's go to line one now, where we're joined by Kristen, our Kenai connection. Hey, Kristen, how you doing? Oh, sorry, are we there, JR? Did we lose Kristen? Oh, this is Pat on line two. Pat, are you there?
Oh, I am here.
Hi, Pat. You're on the air with Johnny Ellis.
Hey, Pat.
Well, thank you. Well, Johnny, y'all did a great job on the election. I mean, picking up a seat, not losing any, and the same thing with Lescaro in the House. I know that was a lot of accomplishments there.
Yeah, and we appreciate all the help folks like you gave us.
I appreciate that. I guess my question is, now that it's 11-9 versus 12-10, how will that translate in some of the votes and when they have to work with the Democrats? We know the Republicans have not worked at all in the Senate. That's been an awful situation. But where do they have to now deal with the Democrats before they can run it over? What are the blocking points the Democrats now at least have?
Well, Ben Stevens made it a very ugly partisan place and a very negative place to work for the last 2 years of his presidency. And now I'm hoping for us all to sort of get with the new message from the voters. I heard the message from the public that they want less partisanship, less bickering, more people that are going to buckle down. That was a lot of the enthusiasm, I think, fueling Sarah Palin's victory, which was, let's get past the politics as usual. And I think the folks in Congress and the folks who go down to the legislature in Juneau, If they've listened to the public, like I believe our side has, we're going to work together. I got a call from Sarah Palin yesterday wishing me well, and I congratulated her on her victory and told her that we were going to sit down and come up with all the areas of common ground that we think we can work with her on, based on the promises she made to bring back various programs and other things we want to accomplish with her. We think, you know, it's got to be better than Frank Murkowski.
Right.
Aaron, we met with him, and Pat, we met with Frank Murkowski 2 years ago. You know, the first 2 years of being bullied and steamrolled by Frank Murkowski were very unpleasant. We stood up to him at every necessary opportunity. But 2 years ago, we sat down as Democrats and said, what can we do in the last 2 years of the Murkowski administration to find common ground? We had 13 things on a paper, substantive issues, that we thought Frank Murkowski could work with us on. He went through the motions of a meeting. He ignored everything that we had on the list and just started trying to bully us into some vote or some issue that he wanted to talk about. And we left the meeting upset, a little nauseous, aggravated that Frank Murkowski still hadn't gotten it 2 years into his failed administration. And so I told Sarah Palin yesterday on the phone when she wished me well that I wanted to sit down and talk with her about all the positive things that we could accomplish together, because there's some momentum for change, and the Democrats are going to be part of that.
What did she say?
She said that she welcomed that, and as soon as she got things together a little more organized, that she was happy to sit down with us and do that. We want to find, you know, we're not going to agree on everything necessarily, but there are lots of positive things that we, like bringing back municipal assistance revenue sharing. Mm-hmm. She made that promise. We plan to help her keep that promise.
That's a good start.
And that's
right
just
there.
One example that would have a real positive effect statewide.
Excellent. Pat, thanks. Yes. Pat, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
All right, we got to take a break here, but we thank you for your call.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Pat. More callers on the line. There is a line free, however, at 929-5160. Feel free to jump in if you've got a question or comment for our guest, Senator Johnny Ellis. I'm your host, Aaron Selbig, and I promise we shall return. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. 517 in the Anchorage Bowl. You're tuned into the Aaron Selbig Show on Kudo 1080 AM, bringing you the demo memo, as we do every Friday from now into the future, into the foreseeable future anyway. Johnny, we've got a lot of callers lined up with questions for you. Let's jump right into the pool of ideas. We go to line one, where we're joined by Kristen, our Kenai connection. Sorry, Kristen, we had a little communications glitch there. We're glad to have you on the line.
Well, I'm glad I finally got through. I was just kind of wondering, since they passed that ballot initiative one about the shortening the session, how soon will that go into effect, if it will actually go into effect? Since I've noticed that on some initiatives, the legislature has a tendency to kind of ignore them or circumvent them.
It's 2008, right?
Senator yeah, that's Ellis? A good question. It won't affect this coming legislative session. It would be the year after. And, you know, the dirty little secret is that this was advisory. The state constitution hasn't been changed. Mm-hmm. The sessions are still 121 days, but the legislature is supposed to adjourn now if they go along with the public after 90 days. So I think in the 2008 session, you may see people get the main work done in 90 days. And then if they don't, there will be an extension. Or there will be multiple special sessions.
Yeah, four special sessions.
Before
maybe.
Frank Murkowski came along with his bully boy kind of attitude and tactics, we didn't have, you know, it's unheard of to have four special sessions in a single legislature like we have during the Murkowski, this last year of the Murkowski administration, or last 2 years. So in the 2008 session, there will be an advisory vote from the public that's activated for a 90-day session limit. But I think you could well see extended sessions or expensive special sessions. I do know that in this next legislature, we are going to talk in the legislative branch about ways to ameliorate the migration of power from the legislative branch to lobbyists and to the executive branch. Under our state constitution, we have the strongest executive among state executives across the United States. And so we're looking at ways to protect the prerogatives and the powers given to us by the state constitution for the legislative branch. So that's going to be up for discussion in January.
I've heard some of your colleagues on this ballot measure one. I think it was John Harris who said the other day that shortening the session of legislature takes power away from the legislature and gives it to the executive branch. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
And so you were against ballot measure one.
Well, I knew it would pass, and I talked to anybody who asked me. I honestly answered and said I didn't think it was a great idea. The public, you know, loves knocking politicians in the head and say, get your work done in 90 days. Mm-hmm. The real fundamental problem is that we run our state government. All of our state services depend on the fluctuating, unpredictable world commodity price for oil. And that's how we run our government. We don't have a stable funding source. We don't know how much money is going to be in the bank to run our state from years to year. We have our reserve accounts, but the money coming in, the cash flow, is somewhat unpredictable. The Constitution has us starting in January. The price forecasts don't come out until later, so no serious work happens on the operating and capital budget until relatively late in that 121-day period. And so there are going to have to be adjustments made based on what the public wants us to do, 90 days, get our work done, and what the realities are of predicting world commodity prices to fund our public services.
Kristen,
it's a heck of a way to run a state.
Kristen, are you still there with us?
Yes.
What did you think of that ballot measure? How did you vote on it?
I voted against it because, like the man says, we don't know. You know, if we had an income tax, we would have at least a base level of knowledge of how much money we have on hand at any one time. But we don't have that, and yes, most of the money comes from oil and gas sales, and plus the fact that you have this huge state, many different types of people. You have rural areas, bush areas, subsistence areas, big urban areas, and they all have their own special problems and their own special needs, and 90 days just isn't going to cut it.
Well said, Kristen. I voted the same way for the same reasoning. You know, we've been talking about on this show lately the possibility of maybe going the other way, doing what a lot of other states do, having a full-time legislature. Giving you the possibility. I know it sounds like a radical idea, but giving you the possibility of maybe cutting down on some of the ethics troubles.
Oh, I've always believed in that. I'd say double or triple their salaries. Build a dormitory and a commons in Juneau for them to live in and have a full-time legislature. Just, you know, have them there and doing their job because there's just so much that needs to be done and it changes all the time. I mean, a flood takes place on the west coast somewhere or, you know, part of an island sloughs away, taking the village with it, and these things have to be addressed and they can't be addressed, you know, if there's no legislature or to help legislate the money for it, or you know, you have droughts and the fall of various commodities, like a crash in the fishing industry somewhere. I mean, it's just a very complicated state. Even though we have a small population, it's a huge place to try to legislate and control. And 90 days, it just isn't going to do it. It's just what you're giving power to special interests because they write the bills and then they hand the bill to a legislator, hand the bill with one hand and a suitcase full of money with the other, because as far as I can tell, that's not illegal to buy a vote that way. And, you know, those people who don't have connections will suffer, and those people who have all the connections will make out like bandits.
Thanks a lot, Kristen. Well said. We've got to take a short break here on the Aaron Selbig Show. Senator Johnny Ellis, our guest. We do have one phone line open for you if you'd like to jump in at 929-5160. Senator Johnny Ellis with us on the Aaron Selbig Show today. By the way, folks, Senator Ellis is going to stick around with us past the bottom of the hour break. We've got lots to talk about, and we've got callers on the line. Let's head right back into it to Line 2 and Caroline. Hi, Caroline. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Senator Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon. And Senator Ellis, I still have that lamp, so don't despair if you decide you want it.
I'm still coveting that lamp, though I should not covet my neighbor's property, but
that's
I do.
One I got in a fundraiser, and I'm glad I got it. First of all, I'm glad to hear that now Governor-elect Palin had agreed to restore municipal funding, because that's one of the most mean-spirited things I think I've ever seen a governor in this state do, was the way he slashed that. Another one that if everybody is smart, they will restore, and that's the longevity bonus. And believe me, I will never get a penny of it. I've been up here long enough, but wasn't old enough when they phased it out.
And she made that promise as well. And
she also promised to get rid of the jet, did she not?
Yes, she did.
Yeah, that's the first order of business to sell that. But we're going to help her. The Democrats are going to help her keep her commitment to restore municipal assistance, revenue sharing, and the longevity bonus. She also, in a forum, said that she agreed with Tony Knowles that the Republicans were wrong to roll back Denali KidCare and throw pregnant, low-income women and low-income children off of Denali KidCare, basic health care. So we listened very carefully to what Ms. Palin said during the election for governor, and we hope to work with her to help her keep her promises.
Well, that's good. It's important. Now, one thing about the funding, and I'll take issue with a full-time legislature. I think there's so many other states out there that have done that have had it on the numbers that we have versus full-time, and I think those things can be looked at because it's not just complications. It's a matter of population base.
Sure.
But the one thing which I wonder if anyone's ever tried doing, and that would be kind of a sliding scale based upon X amount of money, we will do X. It's just like Aaron does with interviews. If you've got a 15-minute interview, you have these questions. If you get a 30-minute, you have these extra, you know, either further in depth or more questions.
Gosh, that's
so you mean
true.
You mean a budget A, a budget B, a budget C?
Not necessarily A, B, or C, but just if we're funded at X level, we will be able to do it up to 50%, up to 70%, or whatever. But just have your, you know, the priorities shouldn't change. That I'm assuming you have the same priorities all the way through. It's just the level at which you're able to fund them. And I would think that's something which could be worked on all from day one and not have to wait till the last to do all this horse trading that they always do.
Interesting thought. Thanks, Caroline. What do you think, Senator Ellis? I mean, that is a good point that, you know, maybe it doesn't quite matter so much on what the X dollar amount is at the end if your priorities are going to be the same.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of grappling with that, with the new governor and new administration, what the priorities are, because it's hard to get 61 people to agree on exactly what the priorities are. Different people bring mm-hmm. different emphases and experiences from around the state. The idea to have backup plans, though, that Carolyn's suggesting is a good one. I do know that there's a lot of cry across the state for a fiscal plan, for a strategic investment plan, for long-term planning from the state. We've, in fits and starts, tried to do that in the past, and many of the people who tried to do that were thrown out of office or retired. And so it is time to make another run at that, because the price of oil has been sliding down since these folks made these promises, even Sarah Palin's promises. And I'm not sure that all the money, new money from the new oil tax regime is going to materialize, because the people on the other side from me of the vote allowed Exxon and British Petroleum to write off a bunch of stuff that most Alaskans don't believe should be written off against our fair share of those resources. So I'm not sure all that money's going to be there, and it's a long time before the gas flows, and we could be in trouble. We need to plan ahead.
Senator Johnny Ellis, our guest with the Demo Memo here on the Aaron Selbig Show. Senator Ellis is going to stick around with us for a little bit after the bottom of the hour break. 929-5160, the telephone number here, if you'd like to jump in. In the Anchorage Bowl. This is KUDO 1080 AM, your progressive voice in Anchorage. You're tuned in to the Aaron Selbig Show. We are joined in the studio today by Senator Johnny Ellis, bringing you the Demo Memo, as we do every Friday. 929-5160, the telephone number, if you'd like to jump in. You know, Senator Ellis, there's been a lot of controversy in the National Democratic Party, in the DNC, ever since Howard Dean took over and implemented his 50-state strategy. He has hired people in every state, including Alaska, and has made it a priority for the Democrats to run, even in districts, even in races that are totally traditionally dominated by Republicans. Now, a lot of Democrats disagree with that. They think that you should put all your eggs in the handful of baskets where you have a real shot. And there's been a power struggle. I'd have to say, after the Tuesday election, Howard Dean's looking pretty good.
He looks like a political genius.
Looks like he knows what he's talking about.
Howard Dean, I'm a big supporter of Howard Dean. I thought it was great for him to become the party chair. I was a big supporter of his and bringing all the Deaniacs into the party, people mm-hmm. who had been outside of the political process just criticizing, you know, the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. And he got a lot of people involved, activated the Netroots, a lot of online fundraising and activism. So I thought all of that was a real burst of energy for the Democratic Party. And I was a big supporter of his 50-state strategy. Howard Dean sent people to Alaska to assess our situation here and say if the money would be well spent. They decided it would be, and they hired my good friend Kay Brown as a message person at the party, and she's been so kick-butt on the Division of Elections.
Oh, yeah.
And holding Whitney Brewster and Lauren Lehman accountable. I just love what she's done
fantastic.
For us over there. So Howard Dean looks like a political genius because he was planning for 4, 6, 8 years into the future of the Democratic Party competing every place. If you can't, to be a national party, which the Democratic Party has been for a couple of hundred years, you have to compete everywhere. You have to stand up for your ideas and your positions everywhere in the country, rather than just being a party of the left coast and the east coast with blue bastions on either side. You have to go out and take your ideas to the heartland, to the south, wherever it might be. And so that kind of feistiness and take it to the people kind of attitude from Howard Dean, I think, is real leadership. The Democrats have been limited in their ability to raise money compared to the big Republican money machine for about over a decade. And so the conventional wisdom of certain party leaders was, let's put the money where it will do most good to bring about a Democratic victory in the House. It was a fight between Howard Dean, or a disagreement with Rahm Emanuel, the congressman from Chicago, and to some extent with Charles Schumer, the senator from New York for the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. But in the end, they worked together well. It was some of the Republican scandals, the sex scandals and the corruption and the money scandals that really expanded the playing field. Howard Dean couldn't foresee that. Rahm Emanuel couldn't foresee that. But they, in the end, were a good team to expand the field and really see a blue tsunami, a Democratic wave, fueled by independents and disgruntled Republicans. You know, the progressive base came out, all the elements of the Democratic coalition that have been there since FDR. But there were new elements to that, progressives, middle-of-the-roaders, and disgruntled Republicans, Republicans that have had it with a Republican Party that doesn't believe in fiscal discipline, that spends like drunken sailors, Republicans that suspend habeas corpus are not popular with a lot of traditional Republicans who said, we've had enough, and we're going to vote for the first time in our lives. For example, Don Smith, congenitally born Republican, former legislator and Anchorage Assemblyman, voted for Berta Gardner. He and his wife, for the first time in their lives, voted for a Democrat for the legislature because he could not take the Vico scandal and the influence and the Randy Rudricks and Darwin Petersons of the world. And he endorsed, publicly endorsed, Representative Berta Gardner, a Democrat. So you saw a real change out there. And the Democrats, to hold on to any influence that we gained and national power, need to reach out to people of all persuasions and get the job done. People are expecting results.
Senator Johnny Ellis, our guest today on the Aaron Selbig Show, 929-5160, the telephone number. JR, let's mosey on over to line one now, where we're joined by Vince. Hi, Vince. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Senator Ellis.
Great. I'm glad to be on.
Hey, Vince.
How you doing, Senator?
Good. You got a question?
Yes. I'm real happy about also the turnout, not only nationally, but even locally, in how, while we didn't get into the majority, we're close. And I kind of wanted to see if you'd give me your sense on the organization of the Senate there, 11-9, and what that means. And also, I just kind of heard a little nasty rumor that, and I don't know if you can speak to it or not, on the Senate president and the likely possibilities. There's one who really scares the heck out of me from the Valley.
Well, would her name rhyme with Lida Mean?
Yeah, I say her initials are Lida Green.
The Billboard Queen?
That wasn't Edie Amin, no. Senator Lida Green, I actually found a little common ground with her 2 years ago. We said, why are we just banging our heads against the wall and fighting? We sat down with Lida Green and tried to find, we didn't find much common ground, but we tried to be civil and figure things out. So, you know, the public elected me, they elected her, they send us down there in a room of 20 people, and we have to get along as best we can.
Right.
So I don't know what the Senate organization will be. I just know the public is telling us to try to get along. with a more evenly divided Senate and Sarah Palin carrying the message of not following politics as usual, I'm hoping it means that in the Senate we're going to have more cooperation and sort of reject that negative Ben Stevens vibe in the state Senate. And whether it's Lida Green or somebody else, that we would really respect the public's opinion that a more evenly divided Senate could be a more productive state Senate for the people of Alaska.
All right. Thanks a lot, Vince. Appreciate your call. JR, do we have time to take another one and take a break here? Okay. We're going to go back to the phones to line two. And I think this is our resident dissenter to the dissent. Is this Scott?
Hey, guys.
Hey,
how's
Scott.
It going?
How you doing?
I'm doing well. First of all, congratulations, Senator.
Thank you very much, Scott.
Congratulations here in the state for clearly moving forward and just kicking the Republicans' butts there nationally. Here's my question. Oh, I don't want to forget. Also, I wanted to thank Aaron. I know Aaron is a veteran.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Veterans Day tomorrow. Absolutely, yeah.
So I'm not going to get a chance to talk to you tomorrow, Aaron, mm-hmm. and so I wanted to thank you.
Yeah, we sure. respect your service.
You bet, and thank you to all the. I'd like to say thank you. Thanks for reminding me, Scott, to all the veterans out there, especially our boys that are over there fighting right now in the 172nd Striker Brigade in Iraq. Our hearts and our prayers are with them.
And women.
Yeah,
and women, too. JR just said the same thing, too. Don't forget
the
ladies.
Oh, JR said the women. Don't forget the ladies.
Thank you. I'm sorry. My brothers and sisters in the United States Armed Forces, hats off to them tomorrow.
You know, here's my question, and this is more of a national than a state question, but how come no impeachment?
Well, I think...
The progressives voted for the Democrats largely because of the war, and the Democrats have said that the president has committed crimes in going to war and during the war. How come no impeachment?
Well, Scott, I don't think that's a decision that's been made yet. I know in political terms that impeachment wouldn't be the first order of business. The Democrats now have the ability to subpoena people and have people under oath before committees, and I think you're going to see a very aggressive effort on the part of the Democrats to get to the bottom of what's real and what's not real in terms of the run-up to the war. I think the American people are going to get some real answers about 9/11 and about the war in Iraq. And then if there is evidence on the record, testimony under oath, of high crimes, then the American people can make a judgment then of whether it would be reasonable to pursue anything in that regard. There would not.
How do you mean?
Excuse me?
I mean, how do you mean the American? It's the House that decides to impeach, not the American.
Right. Well,
people.
Public, Scott, as you know, public opinion is a very important element in politics in our country.
Oh,
in our
okay.
State.
So the House, the Democrats will impeach if the polls look good.
No, that's not. I'm just saying
that's
that.
What you're saying.
No, I'm saying the public opinion would be an important element in that. But the most important thing would be evidence from those hearings. And I think that's the first order of business. And then
how
we can take
judge,
it from there.
How do you judge public opinion?
Well, I don't. I listen to my neighbors, and I take my gut feeling about what the oath that I took to the Constitution, and I take it from there.
So that's what you think the Democrats in the House should do, is they should talk to their neighbors?
I think
they should. Neighbor, if they should
talk to
the president or not.
They should talk to their constituents, and then they should consider their oath of office.
Well, let me ask you this. I think Scott is engaging in a little bear baiting here. Senator Ellis, should that? And I agree with you. I think
is he offering me donuts? Is he bringing donuts and grease into the setting a trap?
And it's not working though. Hang on a second, Scott. It's my turn to ask a question. You just hang on a second. Senator Ellis, I do agree. I think there should be, and I think there will be investigations regarding the Iraq War and the lead-up to it. But do the Democrats nationally have higher priorities right now, or things to work on that they'll be able to push through maybe more quickly, more easily?
I think they're going to do both. I think they're going to start the hearings, but I think they're not going to say that we're out to impeach the president before the hearings occur. Because the hearings haven't occurred, Scott. You sound like
you
a reasonable and intelligent person.
He does.
So I'm.
Do you understand the process of how it works?
Yes,
Scott,
I do.
Scott, we got to let you go, and it's not because of the annoyance factor. It's strictly because of a time factor.
And then the Senate
it's
runs a trial,
quarter
right?
to six
yeah,
in the Anchorage Bowl. This is the Aaron Selvig Show on KUDO 1080 AM. Senator Ellis, good to see you. Thanks a lot for coming in to join us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's great to have the demo memo back.
It's terrific.
I can't wait to see who we got next week.
Absolutely. We'll be here, and I appreciate the time on the air.
Absolutely, and congratulations on the big victory nationally and here in Alaska as well.
We got to keep it going.
Fantastic. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we'll give you more of the details on the judge's verdict in Fairbanks that Governor Murkowski cannot sign a gas pipeline contract on his own. Also, the debate over the name of the new middle school in East Anchorage. All that and more coming up in our last 15 minutes of the Aaron Selbig Show.